Hello, besties. Welcome back to another episode of Net Worth and Chill with me, your host, Vivian Tu, aka your rich BFF and your favorite Wall Street girly.
Before we kick off this episode, let's take a second for an advertisement from our partners at Marshalls. All Net Worth and Chill besties know that Marshalls hustles to get the good deals so you get the good stuff. And as your rich BFF, I love to catch a good deal on high quality pieces, so you already know I'm a Marshalls girly. Their buyers work very hard every single day to bring the best quality on-trend finds at an incredible price. And whether you're looking for a special event outfit or you just want to look and feel extra confident at work, Marshalls will always help you save a little cash while still being the most fashionable person in the room. Shopping at Marshalls means upholding your quality standard and saving at the same time.
And this year, as we head back into spooky season, I really want to bring it back to basics and go back to my roots. If you have not been following me on TikTok since the beginning, the very first video that I made ended up going viral. And I think a big part of why it went viral is because I was calling out bad behavior on social media and trying to debunk some of the craziest advice that I have seen on platforms like TikTok and Instagram. And I basically just said, TLDR, I do not have a get rich quick scheme, but if you want to learn about personal finance, you can follow me. And today, on today's episode of the pod, we are going to be debunking some of the biggest trends in finance and money across digital media, whether that be social, whether that be some other podcasts, whether that be things we've seen on TV, whether that's something we've seen from gurus. Basically, if it's icky, we're going to talk about why. And before we even get into that, I want to preface this conversation with the caveat that I do think social media has made finance broadly more accessible to many people and most people. And I think that's a good thing. However, on the internet, it's also really, really hard to tell who's legit versus who's just some Joe Schmo talking out of their butt. And while we certainly can't cover every single horrible, terrible thing we've seen on the internet, we're going to cover some of the most vicious. And I mentioned Joe Schmoes, so let's get into it. Our very first topic, life insurance. So let me be clear. I'm not saying that life insurance is not an important part of a financial picture. But I also want to be really, really clear when I say life insurance is not an investment. It is, as the name suggests, insurance. Yes, basically the same exact way that car insurance or home insurance or health insurance works. What happens is you put money into a pot in case of a rainy day, if something were to happen to you, then you would get a payout for your loved ones. Simple enough. That's the death benefit of life insurance. What you see a lot of gurus across the internet peddling as, you know, life insurance is so amazing. It's infinite banking. It's how you create a generational interfamily bank, like blah, 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 whatever. What they're talking about is some variation of whole life insurance, which not only has the death benefit of you put money in, if you die, your loved one gets some cash. It also has something called a cash benefit, where you can essentially borrow against your own money. But what most gurus don't tell you is that this type of insurance has incredibly high upfront fees, so much so that it really just does not make sense unless you already have a ton of money. Because picture this, right? You are a super rich person. You have your money in some very, very risky investments, like you're investing in a startup or a small business. You have your money in some more, I would say, moderate investments that are diversified. So you're buying some index funds that track the broader market or the S&P 500, what have you. And then you want something that's lower risk. This is what many rich people will buy. They'll either buy bonds or they'll buy bonds and they'll buy like life insurance with a cash benefit. They'll buy, you know, annuities, things that are very more reliable and dependable, with the trade-off being you're not getting nearly as big of a return. And if you're rich, that's not a problem because you're likely going to be getting larger returns on things like your moderate and higher risk investments. However, if you are a regular schmegular person who doesn't have a gazillion dollars to invest, you may not have enough money to be able to have all three different types of what I would call risk categories. So what you'll need to really be focusing on is just the moderate, middle of the fairway investments. Yes, there is risk. Yes, there is reward, but it's neither too risky nor too risk averse because, you know, you want to make sure that you are getting as much of a return as you can. So now that we've kind of broken down why whole life insurance doesn't make sense for everyone and why it certainly is not an investment, it's insurance, here's what you should probably do instead if this is something that interests you or you are looking into some sort of a parachute or protection for your family and loved ones. Instead of buying a whole life insurance policy, consider just investing your money in the stock market and buying term life insurance, which is much, much cheaper and only has that death benefit we discussed. In a perfect example, MetLife determined that an average 30-year-old male would pay $672 a year for 20 years of term life insurance and $8,320, more than 10x a year, for whole life. For the average person, the money that would be required for the upfront costs for whole life would be much better invested in the stock market. You'd see meaningfully higher returns and for all of the times that whole life insurance is touted as such an amazing end-all be-all thing that you have to do if you want to be financially stable, it's really just missing that important caveat of it only makes sense if you already have a lot of money. So please remember that when the next time you see some sort of life insurance guru on the internet peddling it, they make a very hefty fee when you sign up through them. And that is why they are pushing it so heavily, not because it's the best option for you. Okay, moving on to myth number two, I would say that across social media, a big myth that I've seen is that luxury items are the norm and that everybody should have them and buy them, and spending more on something means that it's better. Straight up, flat out, that is not true. But this phenomenon exists because of two main reasons. And once I tell you about them, I know you are going to see luxury goods in such a different light. First and foremost, there's actually a psychological principle behind why we buy designer products, because it totally doesn't make economic sense. The reason we buy is actually about status. And the higher the price, the more status we're theoretically buying. And it's why we think when a purse is $25,000, it's better than, you know, a $200 bag. And we've seen this happen, right? So I think it was Payless Shoes who created a store called like Palessi or something. And they took all of their shoes and then put them on the shelves. And instead of charging whatever the normal prices was, they multiplied every single price by 10. So these shoes were in the hundreds. And when shoppers would go in and they would see these shoes that were $400, $500, $600, $700, they would assume that the quality of the shoe was higher. And a ton of people ended up paying those price tags for those products. And they ended up then showing everybody like, oh, actually, these are like Payless shoes. And all of these consumers felt really foolish because they would likely not shop at Payless. But because the price tags were higher, they thought they were higher quality shoes and ended up buying them, which goes to show a lot of the psychology behind pricing is why we feel so attracted to luxury goods. And I would say the second point is people need to realize that celebrities, for the most part, do not purchase luxury items, not the luxury items that they're showing off to you, at least. And I say this because when we look at a celeb carrying a designer bag, oftentimes this unconscious thinking that happens in our brains is like, oh, that person's cool and rich and notable and all the things that I want to be, and they're holding that bag. And if I go and buy that bag, I will hopefully be cool and famous and rich and notable too. But what we don't talk about is how a lot of these celebrities, a lot of these actors and actresses have brand partnerships where they're being gifted all of this product for free. Not to mention, many of them are actually being paid to essentially like give a license against their name and their image to these designer brands, because these designer brands know that their personalities and their stardom and their reach is going to help sell product. And that's not me saying that you should never buy a designer piece or a luxury item. We are allowed to treat ourselves. We are allowed to want nice things. And there's certainly something to be said about handcrafted products and, you know, artisanal pieces that are made in small batches so that not everybody has the same carbon copy of the exact same item. But I also just don't think you need to be spending a fortune on these luxury pieces. When you're buying like designer and high quality items for yourself or your home, it's not always necessary just to dish out a ton of money, because again, paying more does not mean it's better. And there are options like Marshalls, where you can score quality finds at a great value. And since it's the fall, I know a lot of us are thinking about like, how do I get some like cute little pumpkins or like a potpourri or like, you know, the little garlands and stuff like all over my house. That's like when you're investing in home decor, like you can just go to a Marshalls and it's a great place to find high quality home items for a lot less. You don't need to necessarily be shelling out for a brand name fake pumpkin because guess what? It's going to look the same and you're going to be able to spend way less money. And that money might be better spent on something like a sinking fund for those holiday gifts. So just keep that in mind. Like, it's okay to want nice things, but be really, really smart about how you're shopping for them because it can save you a lot of money in the long run. Also, another hot tip, if you are planning on buying anything from a European luxury fashion house, it also might even save you enough money to pay for the flight itself if you buy it from the home country. So for example, Christian Dior is a French brand. And if you buy your luxury goods in France, because they utilize the euro, you will actually get lower dollar value in terms of what you need to pay. But on top of that, you'll get around 12% as a refund on the value added tax because you are not an EU citizen if you're traveling abroad to go to France. You may have to pay an import tax, which is probably close to like 3-5% when you return to the US. But frankly, I don't know what the situation here really is because your mileage may vary. I know some customs agents who have stopped friends who have purchased luxury goods coming back into the country and they've had to pay the tax, and others who must have like smiled extra big or something because they just waved them on through. So again, while you in theory have to pay on the import, sometimes you just don't.
And I know we're talking about money myths and debunking false information on this episode, so it's a perfect time for an advertisement from my friends at Marshalls who give you access to the good stuff all season long, because let me tell you, Marshalls is the truth. PSA from Your Rich BFF, your style matters. It's fall, y'all, and there's no better feeling than walking into a room feeling confident in a stylish outfit. Marshalls has high quality, on-trend finds and designer fashion at incredible prices for any occasion. Trying to impress your in-laws? Important clients coming in for a big meeting? Marshalls has designer finds at amazing prices, so you can get this season's dresses, blazers, knits, and boots that will have your closet stylishly net worth and chilling.
To go into our third myth, I would say if you're on social media, it 100% feels like everyone is talking about buying a home in their 20s, especially these like real estate gurus. And while that is an awesome accomplishment, if you can do that in your 20s, it certainly is not the norm. And there are far fewer homeowners in their 20s than there are renters. And on top of that, there is a huge contingency of people who during COVID and even post-COVID are still living with their parents. And I just want to make it really clear, you should not feel bad about that if that is a decision you have made. Here are some of the actual stats. The average homebuyer is actually 45 years old, which is a far cry from the teeny boppers you see on TikTok showing off their cribs. Frankly, I think a lot of those places that they're showing off are their parents' homes. And, you know, the typical homebuyer also has their own family. They're married or partnered with kids and a pet. And it should come as no surprise that two incomes are better than one. So the fact that, you know, homeownership rate among married couples is 30% higher for married couples than for non-married people, that actually makes a lot of sense, right? Because there's two people working towards one goal versus one person. And that's how a lot of people are affording these houses. They can't do it themselves and they're relying on another person. And I think that needs to be said. And last, I do not mean to burst your Carrie Bradshaw New York City dreams, but a lot of these homebuyers are buying in the suburbs. People are making some pretty big time concessions to find homes within their budget. And that may mean living an hour outside of a major metro instead of right in the heart of the city, or buying a starter home and fixing it up yourself over time. And this is all to say, like, if you want to buy a home, you certainly can, and you can definitely make it a priority in your own financial life. But don't let social media make you think you have a bad life just because you haven't bought a house yet. And frankly, this is a big one that people don't talk about. In many cases, renting is actually a better option. And here's why. When you buy a house, there are a bunch of closing costs. So you have to pay a mortgage origination fee, and you're going to have to pay certain taxes, and you're going to have to, you know, there's basically a bunch of stuff, like you have to pay an inspector. Like, there are so many things that are just little one-off costs that you aren't necessarily thinking of factoring into the price because a home is such a high number compared to, you know, $1,000 for an inspector, but those things really do add up. And those fees don't make sense unless you are able to live somewhere at least 5 to 7 years. And for many young people right now, flexibility is the name of the game. You don't know where you're going to be in 5 to 7 years. You don't know what it's going to look like. You don't know if you're going to have a partner, or maybe if you want to have a kid or a dog, and like you might have outgrown that house you bought back in the day. So I just think flexibility is really important. Two, I will say that when you buy a home, everything becomes your problem. Your toilet starts leaking at 2 a.m., that is your problem. It is so nice to live in a rental building and be able to call up, you know, the property manager or your landlord or your super or whatever and be like, I think something's wrong with my toilet. There's something wrong with the HVAC. There's something wrong with the lighting. There's something wrong with the fridge. And they come and they fix it. And those costs are their expenses and not yours. As someone who rented for 8 years, both in college and, you know, as an adult, I have noticed that I become irrationally angry when something goes wrong in the apartment that I own, because I know that I'm gonna have to pay for it. I know that it's gonna take me time to fix. I'm gonna have to take time away from work or whatever I'm doing, or even just relaxation to deal with it. And that is why my toilet seats in both bathrooms have been wobbly and loose for the past, year, and I still haven't gotten them fixed, which, you know, frankly, it's not a deal breaker. It's not a big issue. But I feel like had I lived in a rental apartment, that's something I would have dealt with literally in 24 hours and it would have been fine. So again, just keep in mind that there are pros and cons to renting and buying, but don't make anybody make you feel bad for not wanting to buy or not having the means to buy right now. Alrighty, now let's get into debunking myth number 4. This is my bread and butter. I love investing. I highly advocate for it, but I see a ton of people on social media just talking about like, just copy the investments of rich people. And I am so sorry, but that is not a good idea. So basically how this works is that I know I saw this guy and he was basically using a screener or like a data scraper that would track something called Form 4s on the SEC's website. So basically those are what is called statements of changes in beneficial ownership. So basically when people who are insiders at a certain company, so like the CEO or like high up C-suite executives or directors or shareholders or whatever, people who own more than 10% of that stock buy or sell shares. And you can look this information up. It's publicly available on the SEC website. There's also other forms like the 13F, which is where institutional investment funds or managers who have at least $100 million in assets under their management disclose their holdings at the end of every quarter, as well as, you know, Schedule 13D forms, which are filed when someone acquires 5% or more of a company's shares, which is often, you know, a pretty big chunk of publicly traded companies. And what I want to say is, yes, it is true that you can track these changes in ownership, but whether or not you should just blindly buy what quote unquote rich people are buying isn't so cut and dry, right? First and foremost, it's important to call out that these like disclosure forms have lags. So you're not buying these stocks when Nancy Pelosi is buying them. You're buying them either 2 to 45 days after Nancy has already gotten them in her portfolio. So what you're doing is you're pumping up what Nancy already has, but you're getting in at a price that's not the price she got. Also, frankly, you don't know why a lot of these people are making certain trades or what their strategy is. And frankly, like this is, you know, this is going to be a tough pill to swallow, but I'm just going to say it. They've got it like that and you probably don't. They are working on a much different scale than the average regular person. And if they were to lose a large chunk of that money, it'd be no problem. But if you were to lose a large chunk of your portfolio, how would that make you feel? That's what I want you to think about. For what it's worth, stock picking is not easy at all. And whether you're going off of, you know, your instincts or trying to do research or, you know, you just heard an amazing trade idea from a friend, like I'm telling you as someone who has worked on Wall Street and worked with some of the best and brightest who would run hedge funds, a lot of hedge funds close down because people make bad investments or bad calls. And these people have unlimited resources at their fingertips. They have Bloomberg terminals. They have institutional research from every single bank across the street and they still can't get it right. I don't think whatever type of research or no matter how smart your crazy cousin is who just happens to be a genius, no matter how smart or how good, you just don't know. And I don't think it's worth your time to try to be a stock picker. So again, I personally don't invest in single stocks. I just buy index funds that track the S&P. And, you know, I'm taking one out of a book out of a very rich man. In 2007, billionaire Warren Buffett made a $1 million bet that an S&P 500 index fund would outperform a handpicked portfolio of hedge funds over 10 years. Guess what? He won the bet. The S&P fund returned about 7.1% annually on average, and the hedge funds, which are paid millions of dollars in fees to invest that money, they return 2.2% every year. That's not good. Okay. Now that we have covered 4 myths and 4 things that I don't like seeing on social media, I do want to leave you with something that I have been seeing that is, you know, it sounds a little too good to be true, but frankly, it's not. It is very, very much legitimate. And this is something that I'm really proud to see across all of these different platforms. And that is financial educators encouraging people to utilize the power of compound interest as early as humanly possible. And I know the phrase compound interest can sound really scary, but it is so simple. It is just a way to say that money makes you money. And then when you have more money from the money that you made, that makes even more money. So basically, it's just this snowball effect of how your money can make you more money. In the same way that, like, when you don't pay off your credit card bill, that interest keeps making that balance bigger and bigger and bigger. By investing, you can also make your balance in your investment account get bigger and bigger and bigger. But this is a good thing, whereas credit card bill balances going up is a bad thing usually. And what's so important is that the best way to really take advantage of compound interest is not to pick the perfect investment. It's not timing the market. It's by starting as early as possible, because time in the market beats timing the market every single time. Here's what I recommend. Consider opening up a tax-advantaged account, something like a Roth IRA, or maybe you already have a 401k with your employer, or even just an individual brokerage account. Then you are going to put cash into that account from a checking or savings account. And then with that cash, you are going to purchase index funds that track things like the S&P 500. You can certainly then put your money into a couple index funds that focus on sectors that you're really, really passionate about, whether that be technology or healthcare or real estate, whatever. But you want to make sure that your investments are super diversified. That's the big word here, diversified. And hopefully, if you have successfully created a diversified investment portfolio, over time, that balance is just going to grow for you. And listen, there are no guarantees on how much money you'll ultimately end up with, because markets do fluctuate. They go up, they go down. But there have been studies that basically show that over a 40-year period, if you invest in a diversified portfolio, you actually have larger than a 99.9% chance of not losing your money. So either you would, you know, be no better off, or you'd be better off. You would not have less money. So I just think that if you are mindful of that and are patient and don't freak out when you see any momentary dips, you are going to be able to grow for the future. And that's just how investing works. It's simple, it's lazy, and it's slow. It's not any of this high energy, crazy day trading stuff. It's really boring, frankly. And that's really it. It's that simple. If you are able to set aside, you know, any sort of money every single month, but in particular, if you can put aside a couple $100 a month and you start early, you can pretty much guarantee that you will be a millionaire by the time you retire. And I know everybody's like, well, what's $1 million when I'm 60? Well, would you rather have $1 million at 60 or not have $1 million at 60? Personally, I'd have the million. And, you know, I think the really prudent advice is just invest early and often. And if you do so consistently with a reasonable amount of money, it can have major, major impacts on your future and set you up in a way that working at your job and just laboring and saving will not be able to. Whew. Okay, so that is the 4 myths that I wanted to debunk, the one that I wanted to corroborate and say that is very true. I truly hope that you have enjoyed this episode. I am so curious what you guys have been really enjoying in terms of this podcast, what topics you'd like to see more of. So if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review and let me know in the comments, like, what you'd like to see more of. That type of feedback is really, really helpful for me and my team. But other than that, thank you guys so much for listening, and I can't wait to catch you guys next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode sponsored by our advertising partners at Marshalls. Managing your finances doesn't mean you have to sacrifice quality. Marshalls has the highest quality on-trend fashion, beauty, and home decor at an amazing price so you can maximize savings. Then you can invest those savings in what? The things that matter most to you. In that designer bag or your new go-to designer dress for any event, or maybe even just in a high-yield savings account so you can go nuts with your holiday shopping fund. Marshalls makes it possible to get the good stuff for less, no matter what you're shopping for.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Net Worth and Chill. If you like this episode, make sure to leave a rating and a review and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Got a financial question you want answered in the future? You can leave me a voicemail or text me at 908-858-3410. Make sure to follow me at YourRichBFF across social media for even more relatable financial content. Special thanks to my team at Audioboom, as well as Range Media and WME. See you next week. Bye!